trying to get that set.
There are a few notes over here if y'all want them up there on the front pew. Let's look. We're going to read the rest of Jeremiah chapter 1 this morning. We just did a couple of verses out of it. We did read some verses out of it, but I just want to read the whole little passage. And we're going to look at different parts of Jeremiah tonight as we study his call, as he was called by God. So let's read beginning in verse 4 of chapter 1 of Jeremiah. Now the word of the Lord came to me, this is Jeremiah speaking, and God said to him, "Before I formed you in the womb, I knew you, and before you were born, I consecrated you. I have appointed you a prophet to the nations." And then Jeremiah didn't particularly get thrilled about this. He says, "Then I said, 'Alas, Lord God, behold, I do not know how to speak because I am a youth.' But the Lord said to me, 'Do not say I am a youth, because everywhere I send you, you shall go, and all that I command you, you shall speak. Do not be afraid of them, for I am with you to deliver you, declares the Lord.' And then the Lord stretched out his hand and touched my mouth, and the Lord said to me, 'Behold, I have put my words in your mouth. See, I have appointed you this day over the nations and over the kingdoms to pluck up and break down, to destroy and overthrow, to build and to plant.' And the word of the Lord came to me, saying, 'What do you see, Jeremiah?' And I said, 'I see a rod of an almond tree.' And then the Lord said to me, 'You have seen well, for I am watching over my word to perform it.' And the word of the Lord came to me a second time, saying, 'What do you see?' And I said, 'I see a boiling pot facing away from the north.' And then the Lord said to me, 'Out of the north, the evil will break forth on all the inhabitants of the land. For behold, I am calling all the families of the kingdoms of the north, declares the Lord, and they will come, and they will set each one his throne at the entrance to the gates of Jerusalem, and against all the walls thereabout, and against all the cities of Judah. And I will pronounce my judgments on them concerning all their wickedness, whereby they have forsaken me, and that have offered sacrifices to other gods, and worshiped the works of their own hands. Now, gird up your loins, and arise, and speak to them all which I command you. Do not be dismayed before them, lest I dismay you before them. Now behold, I have made you today as a fortified city, and as a pillar of iron, and as walls of bronze against the whole land, to the kings of Judah, to its princes, to its priests, and to the people of the land. And they will fight against you, but they will not overcome you. For I am with you to deliver you, declares the Lord." And notice, in reading all of this, write this down, it is God who does the calling. God says to Jeremiah, he says things like, "I formed you." He says things like, "I know you." He says things like, "I sanctified you." He says, "I ordained you. I send you. I command you. And I am with you." And that's the way God is. It's God. When God calls a man or a woman to go do something for him, it's not a little thing that we think that we may not, or we may or may not be able to do. Ever. If God raises us up and tells us to go do something, it's no longer us. It's God, and there is no way anyone, anyhow, I don't care if everybody, all the rulers he's talking about going to turn against him, all the political rulers, all the religious rulers, all of the people in the land, all of the people in the surrounding, all of that didn't matter, because God was the one that raised him up.
And folks, I want to tell you something. When God raises you up and me up and this church up or this community or whatever up to go do something, there is no one that will be able to stop it. Now, that doesn't mean there will not be people that try to stop it. That doesn't mean there will not be tough times. It doesn't mean that at all. But there is no way anyone can stop it. Jeremiah knew beyond a shadow of a doubt that it was God who was calling him. It was God who was setting him apart. And it was God who was commissioning him. And I want to tell you something. I've known a lot of young men who have so-called been called to the ministry and quit. God didn't call them. Yes, sir.
Was God speaking to Jeremiah verbally?
I think so. And I don't know that he spoke to Paul verbally. You know, I don't think this is something. I don't think he's never spoken to me verbally. You know, but that doesn't mean that he can't speak to someone else. I mean, because he raises up people in different ways to do different things. And, I mean, he just works differently in everyone's life. But I believe that Jeremiah was actually hearing God. He's a young man, and he's hearing God. And I think there's a reason for that. And the reason is that God knew that it was a special circumstance that he was going to be facing things that you and I probably never will have to face. I don't know. We might. But in any case, yes, I believe God was speaking because it says that. It indicates that. Now, that doesn't mean, you know, it doesn't mean that God might not have been speaking to him within his head to hear it. I mean, you know, when God was speaking to Paul, there were people all around him and they didn't hear it. You know, they heard thunder, you know. But I believe that Jeremiah definitely heard the voice of God speaking to him and this. And I think that it was God. And I think this is always true. Over in Isaiah, a couple of examples, just to kind of, I'm glad you brought that up, because in Isaiah 49:1, it says, "Listen to me, you islands. Pay attention, you people far away. Before I was born, the Lord chose me. And when I was in my mother's womb, he recorded my name." Now that is Isaiah. It sounds very similar to Jeremiah, what happened to Jeremiah. Now, I don't think, you know, Isaiah here is speaking to everyone around all over the world and saying, you know, "But God chose me. And I know he chose me." And I think that part of the problem is nowadays, we do tend to quit. You know, preachers do quit. People do quit. People give up on church. People just walk away. And we don't need to do that. If God literally saved us and caused us to come to know him and we surrendered ourselves to him, we don't need to quit on him. You know, that doesn't mean things won't be bad sometimes, but we don't quit. And we stand for him, like I said this morning. Over in Galatians 1:15, Paul says, "But God, who appointed me before I was born and called me by his kindness." You know, Paul also, there's a very real calling that God gives to people, you know, to preachers, to prophets, to people that he raises up to go do something. You know, now he may not call everyone in this room, for example, to preach. You know, it's a very common thing, by the way, for people who get saved and all of a sudden God begins to work in their life and they begin to see God at work and they see him doing this and doing that and all of that to automatically assume they're calling them to preach. That's not always the case. That's why I kind of hesitate, you know, when somebody comes to me and say, a new Christian especially comes to me and says, "I think God's calling me to preach." Well, you know, we talk about it. And for example, Bradley's case, I've known Bradley since, you know, whatever, and I've been observing him, and I thought Bradley was going to be called to preach long before he ever even thought about it, you know. And that's just me, but I've just seen a lot of kids. And I don't say that about anyone, because I've only had about two or three people that under my ministry in 40-something years that I've really thought God called to preach. Be honest with you, you know. And I've only ordained two or three, maybe two. I don't know, as far as preachers. But in any case, let's go on. Here we see that Jeremiah was touched by God. And when God touches Jeremiah's mouth, the result was not only a message to deliver, but a messenger who was transformed and purified. There's a story, James Bryan Smith, I read some of his stuff, and he tells a story about John of Kronstadt. I've heard of him. He was a 19th century Russian Orthodox priest. And at that time in Kronstadt, where he was from, alcohol abuse, as it was all over the world, was just rampant. It was just awful. And you could not go down the road and walk without people in the gutters drunk. There was just, you know, over half the town were alcoholics, and they just were laying around everywhere drunk. And most of the priests just stayed in the church. They didn't go out and everything, but John couldn't stand it. And so John would go out into the streets, and they said that he would go out and he would find these drunk people in the gutter and get out in the gutter with them and hold them in his arms. And, you know, he would tell them, you know, he would say, "This is beneath your dignity. You were meant to house the fullness of God." And the thing is, John here, this guy here, just like Jeremiah, it wasn't just a message, it was a life that was changed. Folks, when we are touched, write that down, touched by God, we become different. Now, one of the considerations that I think is something worth us thinking about in the modern church is that we don't want to be different. We don't want to be different. We want to be, the philosophy seems to be, well, if we're like the world, then we can get them to come into our church. If our church is worldly, then we can get people to come in, and then we can share the gospel. It's not the message. It's the life. And, you know, I've talked to people, and they say, you know, I went to such and such a church, and, you know, I went there trying to find a difference in my life, and I didn't say nobody there was any different than me. Why did I want, you know, why even go there? I mean, I can stay the same as I am that way. You know, there needs to be a change. But difference will always cause problems for you. When you are different, you ask any teenager in high school, if they go over to the high school and they are different, what's going to happen? Any of y'all ever remember being a teenager? You know? What about your job? You go to work and you're just different, what's it going to cause you? You know? And I'm not talking about just being odd. You know, we all, you know, a little bit odd, you know. but I'm talking about in a Christian manner, if we nowadays are different, we are looking for possibly losing our job. We are looking for, in high school or college, being made fun of and unpopular. You know, we are looking for that. And Jeremiah was different because he was touched by God. And from the moment he was touched by God, it began to cause problems for him. The moment he was called by God, he began to have problems with other people. He began to have problems with the other prophets. He began to have problems with the other priests. He began to have problems with the political people. He just began to have problems with everyone because he was considered non-patriotic. He didn't even support the military. And he was from the South, and he didn't support the military. And so he was
He was unpopular. And if you are saved and you act like it, there's going to be times you will be too. Well, in verse 10, we begin to see this idea of the judgment. And not only judgment, we see the idea of salvation. It says, "See, I have appointed you this day over the nations and over the kingdoms to pluck up and to break down, to destroy and overthrow, to build and to plant." Jeremiah was a prophet of both judgment and salvation. He taught that God would judge the nation, write it down, and then restore his people. Now, there's these verbs here. I'm reading out of New American Standard tonight, but there are verbs there that are like root out, pull down, destroy, and throw down. Those are not real positive words, are they? It's not very positive to say, "I'm going to root you out," or "I'm going to pull you down," or "I'm going to destroy you," or "I'm going to throw you down." Those are words of judgment. But then he uses words like build and plant. And those are words of salvation. And these emphasize the two aspects of his ministry. His job was to tell people that God is going to root you out and destroy you because of your sin. But God is also going to lift you up out of this destruction and restore you. And it's kind of, Becky and I were talking about this, you know, it's kind of hard. Jeremiah's known as the weeping prophet. I mean, that's just what he's called because he's just upset all the time, fussing, fussing, fussing. Negative, negative, negative. Everybody just said, "You're negative. You're negative, negative, negative." We don't like that. You know, we don't like that. We don't like negative preachers. We don't like that. But God told him to be that way. But at the same time, he says, after God throws you to the ground and stomps your face into the mud, then he's going to lift you up and restore you. That's big. That's a big thing. And that's not, this isn't the only place. I've given out some verses, and I'm just going to call on you to read them. This is just places all through Jeremiah. It's because I don't want you to think this is just a one-time thing. Who has 18:7 through 11? Okay. Read loudly.
"If at any time I declare concerning a nation or a kingdom that I will pluck up and break down and destroy it, and if that nation concerning which I have spoken turns from its evil, I will relent of the disaster that I intend to do. And if any time I declare concerning a nation or a kingdom that I will build and plant it, and if it does evil in my sight, not listening to my voice, then I will relent of the good that I had intended to do to it. Now therefore, say to the men of Judah and the inhabitants of Jerusalem, thus says the Lord, behold, I am shaping disaster against you and devising a plan against you. Return everyone from his evil way and amend your ways and your deeds."
Okay. Speaks pretty clearly there. Somebody has 24:6. Okay.
"For I will set my eyes on them for good, and I will bring them back to this land. I will build them and not pull them down. And I will plant them and not pluck them up."
Yeah. He says, "I will, even though I'm going to knock them down, I'm going to bring them back and restore them." 31:28.
"And it shall come to pass that as I have watched over them to pluck up, to break down, to throw down, to destroy and to afflict, so I will watch over them to build and to plant, says the Lord."
Yeah. I'm going to knock them down, but I'm going to watch over them and I will build them up. 33:7. "I will rebuild." 42:10.
"If you say in this
And the last one's 45:4.
Thou say unto them, the Lord saith this, behold, that which I have built will I break down, that which I have planted I will pluck up, even this whole land.
Yeah. So there is a lot of negative statements by Jeremiah from God to Judah, but there is also a lot of positive statements because God will build them back up. And then he gives an illustration. He gives two illustrations in this. One, first one is the almond tree branch, and God gives him a vision of this almond tree branch to confirm his calling. Verse 11, and the word of the Lord came to me saying, what do you see, Jeremiah? So what do you see? What vision am I giving you? Okay? And he says, I see a rod of an almond tree. And then the Lord said to me, you have seen well, for I am watching over my word to perform it. Now, let me explain about that almond tree branch. How many of y'all, what is Groundhog Day? Anybody know what Groundhog Day is? Any of you kids, you know what Groundhog Day is, Bubby? Groundhog Day? Huh? Yeah, it's February 4th. What's it for? Yeah. If the groundhog comes out, you know, and he sees his shadow, and, you know, that's how we can tell. You know, I don't know if that's real or not. But in Israel, they looked at the almond tree branch. That's how they could tell whether it was going to be an early spring or a late spring. So this is a vision. God says, you know, I'm going to show you a vision, and it's announcing to Jeremiah, look, Jeremiah, I am ready to perform my word through you. And see, we don't understand about almond tree branches. I mean, that's just a thing for that culture. But what it means, it was confirming Jeremiah's call to the ministry, so to speak. And God was saying that. And then he gives him another thing of the boiling pot. Verse 13. And the word of the Lord came to me a second time, saying, what did you see? So he sees another vision, and he says, I see a boiling pot facing away from the north. Okay, now understand, and we're going to look at this on a map at some point, but that Babylon is to the north. All the destruction on Israel is going to come from the north, okay? And so the boiling pot is facing away from the north. In other words, they are facing away and ignoring Babylon. They think they're going to be okay. This boiling pot is Judah. And he says, then the Lord said to me, out of the north, the evil will break forth on all the inhabitants of the land. For behold, I'm calling all the families of the kingdoms of the north, declares the Lord, and they will come, and they will set each one on his throne at the entrance of the gates of Jerusalem and against all the walls round about and against all the cities of Judah. And I will pronounce my judgments on them concerning all their wickedness, for it whereby they have forsaken me and have offered sacrifices to other gods and worshiped the works of their own hand. So basically, the boiling pot pictures an impending doom. He's saying, you know, Judah, you're getting ready to get blindsided. You're not looking. You're not paying attention. You're not paying attention to me. You're not paying attention to circumstances in the world around you. And you're boiling. This bubbling heat of God's judgment is going to boil over. The scalding effects is going to flow against the gates and walls of Jerusalem. And God's words through Jeremiah will have to root out and destroy before they can build up and plant, again, up in verse 10 that we read. And you know, and I've often thought about this when I've studied this particular passage about preaching about hell. You know, we don't like to preach about hell because that's real negative. You know, we don't want to preach negative. We want to be positive in everything. But, you know, it's hard to understand the love of God if you don't understand the reality of what he saved you from. It's hard to understand salvation if you don't know what in the world it is you've even been saved from. You know, I didn't have any trouble when we were coming up, Butch. I'm sure it was the way, when we were coming up, they told us about hell. And I didn't want to go there. You know, I remember that. That's how I got saved. And somebody said, well, you didn't really get saved because you just wanted to get out of hell. Well, I'm going to tell you what, I did want to get out of going to hell. But I was saved. You know, I'm not ashamed to tell people that, oh, man, it scared the witty-wats out of me. I didn't want to go to hell. And, you know, and I went down and that preacher's wife took time and talked to me and explained the gospel and how much Jesus loved me so much that he died on the cross so that I wouldn't have to go to hell. And I thought, man, somebody really loved me a lot if he did that for me, you know. And so, you know, Jeremiah didn't worry about it. He just did what God told him, and he preached about the bad stuff too, you know. And he faced, as a result of this, a hostile environment throughout his ministry. But God, it's interesting, says, I am going to make you, Jeremiah, into a fortified city and an iron pillar. Verse 17, gird up your loins. That means get ready. You know, gird up your loins means get up out of bed and put your britches on because we're getting ready to do some stuff, you know. And arise and speak to them all which I command you. And do not be dismayed. Don't be scared of them, lest I dismay you before them. You know, if you're ashamed of me, if you're scared of them more than you are me, well, I'll give you a reason to be scared. You know, what's that your mama say? You know, I'll give you a reason to cry. You know, you quit that crying, I'm going to give you a reason to cry. That's basically what God's saying. You didn't know that. I mean, y'all thought that was biblical when your mama said that. Your mama's biblical. You know, Carla, use that. And now, behold, I have made you today as a fortified city, a pillar of iron and walls of bronze against the whole land, the kings of Judah, the princes, its priests, and the people of the land. You know, you don't have to worry, Jeremiah, even though everybody obviously is going to be against him. The king, the princes, that's kind of like the president and the Congress and then everybody else is going to be against you, you know. But the real reason that Jeremiah would be a winner is because God was going to be with him. Verse 8:19. And they will fight against you, but they will not overcome you, for I am with you to deliver you, declares the Lord. You know, God's always the one that makes a difference whether we lose or win a fight. And we started off saying that, you know. Jeremiah was called by God, and he was a survivor in spite of the fact that everyone that was against him throughout his whole ministry, 40-something years, either got captured or killed. Not old Jeremiah. And you know why those people were against him? Because those people were against God. You know, it's one thing. I do stupid, dumb stuff sometimes, and we all do. And I have to admit, there have been times, like when I was teaching it, or even as a pastor or a youth minister or whatever, that I did something stupid and dumb, and people kind of got mad at me. Tony, I know that's hard to believe, but they did. And, you know, they probably had a right to. That's no problem. But, and it helped me. Because usually I repented and turned back. But if they got turned against me because I was standing for God, that's their problem. Because they're not against me for me being for God. And it's the same way with you guys. If you are standing for God and you're doing what God wants you to do, and somebody turns against you because of that, their problem's not with you. Their problem then becomes with God. And you don't have to fight that fight. God can fight on his own. God can take care of situations. And it's the same in all our lives. All of us are called by God to salvation. All of us are going to face tough times. But it is God who will cause us to be winners every time if we just stand for Him. anyway, do you have any questions or comments or something I left out? It's hard to cover everything in a chapter, and I may have left out something that you thought, you know, he should